you've got to keep up with the pace of what's happening now and try to get a sense of what you think is going to happen in a sort of short to medium term future. Because once you've equipped yourself with that information, you're better placed to start to make some decisions. But if you don't, you're blind, you're in the dark.
Welcome to Modern Business Operations, where we talk with leaders about how ops is adapting to our modern world.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Modern Business Operations. My name is Sagi. I'm the CEO and founder of Tonkin. And today I have the very pleasure to host Andrew Daly. Hey, man, good to see you.
Good to see you as well, Sagi. Thank you for inviting me onto the podcast.
Absolutely. Thank you for coming. Well, Andrew, you're the founding director and leader of digital procurement and supply chain practice at Edbury Daly. Tell us more about this a little bit, about the company, about, you know, how you funded it, how you got to this.
Of course, Sagi. Yes, so I'm a career recruiter. I've worked in recruitment all of my life. I first recruited in the world of what was then called purchasing in 1998, would you believe? And we formed the business nearly 20 years ago now, myself and my business partner, Simon Edbury. And we are specialist recruiters in the world of digital procurement supply chain. So we work with vendors like your own business. We work with consultancies and we work with procurement practitioners who've got a focus on digital transformation. And the use of tools like Tonkin. So that's what we do. And I helped Ariba hire their very first person in the UK back in 2003. So that's how long I've been working in the world of government tech. So showing my age there, unfortunately, but I've also shown my experience, of course. Outside of work, you know, I'm very passionate about sport. And as you know, I'm a Seattle Seahawks fan. So we've got a little bit of rivalry there with your sport, the Niners. But yeah, very passionate about procurement and particularly passionate about digital and what procurement can achieve with technology.
Well, thanks again for joining. I think one thing that was very intriguing to me when we talked earlier and went through, you know, your different areas where you spend your time coming from the recruitment world and talent world, you also spend a lot of time on researching and influencing the larger domain of procurement of you, if you will. And, you know, obviously from our perspective from this podcast, the way it operates and the way, you know, you kind of bring together people, talent to really kind of like where that department or this business side of the business is evolving. And of course, how it meets technology and others. And specifically, I think you, I don't know, what was it like last week or very recently, you published a research on that intersection of procurement and digital. Maybe we can talk a little bit about that and what you guys found, you know, and maybe share some insights from that.
Absolutely. Yeah, you know, I've been in this market for a long period of time and you work with procurement people, you see the evolution of procurement all those years and you become very passionate about it and you get to meet all these wonderful people at the conferences from the procurement side, from the tech side, and you get drawn into the whole thing and it's become, you know, the central part of my whole professional career really. So I want to be more than just somebody who finds great people for my customers or gives great career advice to people helping to move jobs. And that research is a good example of it. You know, I've seen the way procurement has evolved going back to when category management was a brand new thing, the early part of my career. And the way technology is creating opportunities for procurement really excites me, it enthuses me. And I get to learn so much about it at the events that we've both attended in recent weeks. And then what sort of stimulated this research we've done recently, which is about the digital skills. So as a recruiter, of course, I have lots of conversations about the way the skill set has evolved in the procurement world. And we really realized that people weren't quite sure what the future skill set looked like. They all knew what the traditional procurement skill set is, but how does that need to evolve to embrace this great opportunity that the tech revolution in procurement is presenting? And so the research was out to go and understand the vision of what that skill set looks like. And that's why we did it. And that's, you know, what we published actually that week before you and I met in Vegas. So the week of Digital Procurement World in Amsterdam was when it was time to be published. You know, we found all sorts of different things about the importance of traditional skills still being there, but how the skill set will evolve over time.
So let's double click on it. I think there's like one of the obvious and maybe sometimes kind of people can get tired of it already, but the topic is, you know, AI, new technology, all those different waves. And, you know, I've been talking with a lot of people about this, but I do think you have potentially a very interesting angle from the from that side of talent and people and skill set, as you mentioned, what do you think this means, you know, on the immediate term, on the short term, on maybe on a little bit longer term, from your research, from your experience, recent experience, how does the market really kind of reacting to this when it comes to skills that people need to have and, you know, talent around that?
Yeah, so it falls into two key areas, really. So if we look at all of our research points to the number one skill that people need to develop is what we call digital literacy. That's the ability to use these tools more effectively. Because if you look at historically, there's been reports out there that tools like Excel get used to 20 or 30% of the actual true capability. We've got to get that number up if we're going to really embrace the value that can be delivered by all these different tools that are out there for procurement. And other professions, of course, as well. You know, procurement's not the only one having its own, you know, tech revolution. So digital literacy is absolutely fundamental. And people might say, well, we're going to have consumer-grade interfaces now. They're going to be really easy to use, like Amazon is, or other things we use in our personal lives. But we've got to look beyond that and say, well, how do we get the most out of a spend analytics tool, out of a sourcing optimization tool, out of an orchestration tool like yours that you offer? And so people need to get better at using technology, and that's an easy thing to say, but how do you do it? And a lot of it comes from actual desire to play around with it, you know, to the point about AI, you know, who hasn't sat and played around with ChatGPT to see what it can do and the power of it. And the more you play with it, the more you realize the potential of it. And that's just a lot of it. You're just scratching the surface at the moment. So digital literacy and the ability to use tools more effectively, and that things brings in things like data literacy, automation, machine learning. They're the sort of tech-related skills, if you will. And that's something which all procurement professionals need to develop in one way or another. Leaders, it's different to practitioners, and digital natives are probably different again. The other skills, which are really important, particularly in procurement, but also in finance and other professions as well, I would argue, are the skills that can't be automated. So I think the skills that can't be replaced by tech. The obvious one of those is relationship building. And if I go back to my very first conversation with a procurement director in 1998, he asked me to emphasize the importance of stakeholder engagement skills, that ability to build a relationship with the internal budget holder. But other key skills that can't be automated that are really going to go up in terms of importance in the digital age are things like critical thinking and strategic thinking. So for procurement professionals who want to really evolve their skill set, they've got to think about the tech, but also stuff that can't be automated, can't be replaced by AI.
You know, it's interesting when you put those two categories, the first thing that came to my mind is, you know, running a company, obviously hiring a lot of different people for a lot of different departments, it is pretty rare to have a person that can be both very technical and also like very good with the relationship and sort of like people skills. And it's like this, you know, that's sort of the common sense. Now, yeah, of course, like it is painting a picture in a very kind of like, you know, simple colors, but there's some truth to this. And I think maybe, and I'm curious to hear your thoughts, maybe that's a good way for people to think about the future, and where the middle ground in between, so not being technical enough and not being like proactive enough in relationship, in strategic thinking, critical thinking, left a gap of just some manual work, some sort of like busy work, some entry-level work, if you will. And I think everyone understands that this is where technology is trying to, quote-unquote, attack at, and always had been, right? Like the difference between a manual saw versus an electric saw. It's not about, you still need someone to know how to cut and where to cut. But, you know, really what you take away is the manual effort of cutting, right?
Yeah.
And so this is kind of where it would be target. And so I wonder if you think people should aim at being good at both of those things, or understanding that there is a fork in a row that is going to become more extreme into, you either know how to pilot the plane of the advanced technologies, or you're essentially the, you know, what's the name of the co-pilot that responsible of the plans and plans of attack, and where it is literally there's two people in the cockpit, and one is responsible for actually driving, the other one responsible for the for the strategy of where we're going and, you know, where the wind is going and so on. What's your thought about that?
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's a really interesting question, and human beings are not an exact same. So, you know, there's so many different potential lines. Just think about what you're saying there, what was going through my mind was, you know, do you as an individual recognize your strengths, double down on those and become really great what comes naturally to you? Or are you the sort of person who says, that's what I'm good at, I'm going to now address my weaknesses and become a more rounded individual and really focus on that? And it's fascinating because I mentioned elite performance generally both professionally, but also in my passion of watching, you know, great sport, things like that. And so, you know, I suppose it depends what sort of job you want to do. Do you want to be very, very good at a narrow particular skill set that you're confident will always be required? Or do you think that's a bit risky? I'm not sure I want to do that. I need to develop a broader capability and be a bit more of a chameleon, if you will. So that's the choice that faces human beings now. And it's to your point about the fork in the road, I think it's becoming a more, you know, a bigger choice that people have to think more carefully about with technology changing the working landscape so much. I think the other thing is, and I learned this watching a great presentation last year at DPW, you know, with the Industrial Revolution, fear is created because we can sort of see the jobs that will be replaced, but we don't necessarily know which jobs will be created as a result. So the great example I heard was when Henry Ford created the production line, you know, there was lots of jobs lost and people were up in arms about that. But what I didn't realize, he was going to inadvertently create the motel industry because people were suddenly able to travel a lot more because they could afford cars. So that sort of Industrial Revolution learning we've seen from the past, that's what we've got coming there. So people have got to make their mind up, but ultimately it's on you to take responsibility. And this thing about digital literacy that I mentioned earlier, the big personal quality that CPOs want to see is intellectual curiosity. They want to see that desire to develop your own personal capability, that ambition, if you will, to pursue excellence in what you do. And that's on the individual, I think, these days, to take responsibility and accountability for themselves.
I 100% agree, by the way. The first point on the digital literacy is spot on, because if you don't even know what's going on, if you're unaware of what's out there, if you're afraid of AI, but you've never opened ChatGPT, that, you know, that's like almost like the most basic thing. And I agree with you. I don't think people do that. I don't think enough people understand the importance of that. Now, it's a hard question. I don't have the answer, obviously.
I'll tell you one point about that. So yeah. I'm at a presentation at an event in London in February to a group of procurement professionals. It was practitioners rather than leaders, and said, hands up, who's scared that AI is going to replace their job? And no one put the hand up. I said, hands up, who's scared that AI might really change their job? And no one put the hand up. And I was like, you guys either don't know anything about AI, or you're much better at your job than I realized. Quite a few people came up to me together at the end of the presentation and said, Andrew, where can we learn about AI? I'm like, where can you learn about AI? Have you not heard it about ChatGPT? Where have you been living for the last few months? You know,
that's crazy.
You know, people have got to embrace it. You know, that one of the big barriers to digital transformation is a fear of change. And, you know, I don't understand why people don't want to get better at their jobs. It's something which has always troubled me that. So, you know, if you're unsure about these things, it's all there for you. This thing called Google, just type in something in there. You might learn a bit of something.
This episode is brought to you by Tonkin. Tonkin is the operating system for business operations, providing businesses with the building blocks to orchestrate any process with no code or change management required. Contact us at Tonkin.com to learn how you can build complex processes fast.
You know, speaking of just typing in Google, like I think we have a precedence for it in recent history. I think the big question is, will this wave happen faster or not? But, you know, it wasn't long ago where you had folks that kind of like embraced, you have a question, go research it.
Yeah.
You know, go just literally, like you said, just type it into Google, like literally any question, like literally any small question. You know, I'm coming from a background of product and engineering, right? And I think in that world, it was super obvious, but it's true for everything else. Trying to do something, you don't even remember it. It's not about knowledge. It's just the recollection of it. It's, oh, I forgot how to, you know, like the way you specifically do that. You just go to Google immediately. You just like, how to blah, blah, blah. You get it immediately, copy paste, you move on with your life. You just did it in like 30 seconds, 5 minutes versus, and then at the same time, And again, I'm not talking about like 5 years ago. I'm talking about 15, 20 years ago, where it's, you just started, versus there were still a lot of people at that same, maybe even like office, that had these massive books, you know, of like Java or C++ or whatever, you know, web development. And they would like, you know, start to look for the page or, you know, look through their old stuff or like really trying to kind of recall it. And the very first thing that happens with those technologies is that, and I love this quote, I think Peter Thiel said it, it's, you're not going to lose your job, or at least, you know, immediately, you're not going to lose your job to AI. You're going to lose your job to your neighbor that knows how to use it.
Yeah. It's right? A great quote, and I couldn't agree more.
Right. And so I completely agree. The digital literacy is almost like the one thing that everyone has to do. I the general question for me, and I don't know, I'm spending a lot of time on AI technologies. I honestly don't even know specifically in this case whether deep knowledge of things, so like depth of, so like being very good at something very, you know, deep, is going to be a more desired human skill, or is being like a multi, like more an entrepreneurish, you know, can fit to whatever it needs. So, because both of those things are like hard to replicate in the short term. Like you can create a machine that is very good, or AI model or whatever, that is very deep in something, but that takes longer. That takes effort and costs money. And so there needs to be enough ROI for this to happen. And the opposite is also true. To truly have something that is, and this was like, you know, the nerds, you know, that kind of really look into AI and all the concept of AGI, you know, artificial general intelligence, like the, even in the name of it, is the point of AI that can, you know, literally like a person be as flexible as a person, right? That can, you know, can really take any task. Both of those are not obvious. And in fact, where you see the immediate, and I'm saying immediate is now, but also in the next, you know, handful of years, even if the technology will get to a much better impact faster than what I'm saying right now, I think where it will actually come down to the industry is most likely in those in between. And I think those are the people that do need to wake up, have a wake up call and train themselves on skills. Because if you are shallow on depth and you're specific, but if you're multi-talented, you do a lot of different things, you know, you both understand a lot of the domain expertise, but also very good with relationship and very good with people and very good in strategy, you're probably safe. Not probably, you're safe. If you're very deep into like, you know, to a point where you have instinct and the true kind of thought leadership around the topic, you're probably also safe. It's the medium, it's the in-between, right? It's not deep enough, spending most of their day doing like busy work, and are not, like you said, having those people skill, or not spending time on those people skill. I think that's where the risk is real. Even for me, when I think about, okay, my hiring plans for the next few years, you know, what type of people do I want to hire? It's not the busy work people.
No. And the world is changing. And look, it's a really interesting question, which you could debate at some length. And a lot of it depends on what you're doing and where you're doing it, and you know, that context. But if I've got one message for people from a career perspective, it is you've got to keep up with the pace of what's happening now and try to get a sense of what you think is going to happen in that sort of short to medium term future. Because once you equip yourself with that information, you're better placed to start to make some decisions. But if you don't, you're blind, you're in the dark, and then you're into your quote about you don't lose your job to the person who is using AI more effectively. But we're all into a new era, and it's exciting. And you know, for those that want to achieve excellence in what they do, there's so much opportunity. You've got to have a mindset of wanting to take on. No one's going to give it to you.
Absolutely. Let's try to shift gears somewhere the other side of that, you know, map, where part of your research was also, you know, what is the emerging, so like practical technologies, areas to invest. You know, the funny, you know, we met in one of those conferences, but something I like to say sometimes is that, you know, there's AI, but then the world still runs on Oracle. There's a lot, there's all these advanced technologies and progress, but I think a lot of listeners and a lot of people would agree that when you actually come back to your day-to-day, some of it sometimes feel foreign because, you know, we still work with older tools, you know, older methodologies, a lot of that stuff. So obviously that in-between bridge is where a lot of innovation happened. And part of your guys' research was to talk a little bit about that. So what interesting insights or like visions you guys found from that?
Yeah, I just want to make one point. You say world runs on Oracle. We were at an SAP conference, Saggy.
I know. It's a Oracle, SAP, you know, it's the same idea.
Yeah, of course. But, you know, it's an interesting question. So, you know, what did we learn? So we learned, and this is the research, but also the sort of anecdotal conversations that preceded the formal, you know, investigation. What we've seen where in the procurement world that I know well, where technology is really being effective is people aren't just buying a solution because it's new and it's cool and it's got AI or it sounds sexy or it's got great marketing. The people that are doing it well are identifying specific problems that need to be solved, or they're looking for areas where they need to really drive better value creation for their stakeholders in the business. And they're aligning their choices based on that. And there's the digital literacy required by the leader, align that with the wider, your digital strategy across the organization. You can't do it, you know. So it's the problems that's being solved by technology. And that's where, because you can get the buy-in, you can get the ROI, and you can build a meaningful business digital transformation strategy around that because it's solving specific problems. And people are a lot more open to using the tools because it's actually helping them do their job more effectively. And that's the real common theme that we found in the research.
Are there any specific areas where, because, you know, there's always waves, and I know in procurement specifically that happened, but really everywhere else, there's always this hype cycle, right? Yeah. There's a new area. And then where that area becomes understood enough and people don't spend it on the wrong places, right? To your point, you know, do you have an acute problem, but like people need to be kind of like aware and educated about it to even sometimes identify the problem.
Yeah, indeed. And I think, well, you know, your own business area is a particularly relevant one, I would say. So, you know yourself, there's a lot of hype and noise investment around the whole intake to pay orchestration space. Why is that? If I go back to that conversation I mentioned earlier in 1998, when I was first briefed to find the purchasing manager that I worked at the time, and the highlight was a stakeholder engagement. You know, we've got to build our relationship with the business. And so all my time working in the procurement world, every conference I go to, the relationship with the business, the perception the business has of procurement, the value it delivers, the ability to engage effectively and painlessly with procurement has been on the agenda for all that time. And this is the reason why I think orchestration has got so much sort of wind in its sails, because ultimately you're going to come along and you're going to really simplify that. You're going to make it easier and you're going to bring an awful lot of other benefits along the way in terms of, you know, the data, the simplicity, the compliance, the whole self-service model, which is very much got a lot of traction. So I think that's a classic example now of why, you know, businesses like your own are getting a lot of excitement. I mean, I don't know if you agree with that, but that's my perception.
No, I agree. I agree. Absolutely. And I think it's interesting. That's your sort of like, not realization, but distillation of the reason. Yeah, I personally agree. Of course, you know, our kind of like approach was always technology should serve people. Mm. And for generations, software specifically for work was more designed to handle data. You know, sort of the first digital transformation wave, it was really just moving paper to digital form. And so it really was about the data. It was about consuming the data. It was about collecting the data, but it wasn't about the behaviors, needs, or priorities of the people. And a lot of the things you mentioned is where you like different departments meet that disconnect, where you might have tools and capabilities and procedures that help your departments do your job, but they completely ignore, not purposefully, but completely ignore the rest of the business needs and priorities. They're not designed for that. So I think, by the way, this is why I think, you know, intake orchestration is big, but this is, I think, why AI, it's been around for a while. Obviously, mm-hmm. There's been development in AI every year on many different aspect, the reason why I think it now got into, so broke the glass ceiling of the techies, you know, in the last 2 years with ChatGPT. It's because the progress with large language modules brought it down to that sort of like communication level, in where, so like the most basic, lower level of shared common skills between us people, regardless what you are, what you like, what you do, our most basic common thing is that we can communicate with each other. And, you know, and language is that key. And all of a sudden now computers communicate with you in your language, versus software has been its own thing, its own UI, its own capabilities, its own interfaces, but also its own, you know, like we obviously very used, our generation is very used to using a mouse. You look at kids, they're like trying to touch everything.
Yeah.
You know, they talk to things. I have like young kids below five. They talk to everything because they saw me talk to Alexa. They would literally tell the TV stop. You know, it's like they can't, like, they don't understand. Oh, no, you need to use a remote to click on it. You know, so it's very interesting to me when you think about it that way. And this is why I think people underestimate the shift that can happen with this. It opens up a capability we just didn't have before, lowering that sort of like communication bar into a place where it is truly feels natural and you don't need to change your behavior. We're not fully there. Technology is there, but the utility of it is not there yet, but it can get there and can get there relatively fast. And I think that will have a big impact.
Undoubtedly. It's just remarkable. I mean, I don't have the brain that works around the same things like large language models. I'm a user. I'd love to understand more about how it works, but my brain doesn't work that way. But I just love the power of what it can do. And some of things like, I asked it to write an advert for me for a role that we're recruiting for yesterday. And I always say thank you at the end. Yeah, I hope you find the right candidate for this job. Good luck with it. And yeah, I love the little things it comes back with. I always say thank you. It's just the way I was brought up to be polite. The different responses you get when you have to do different tasks and then you say how much you appreciate it. Oh, that's great, you know, and the responses. So yeah, you say the communication with it. And but I'm the same, my youngest daughter, she's six next week, and I'll get my Mac out and she'll start touching the screen of my Mac. And I was like, no, Dad, that's your iPad. You know, Daddy's Mac doesn't work that way. But yeah, it is remarkable, isn't it? And the range of questions you can ask ChatGPT. I've asked it how to be a better father, how can I be a better husband, and how can it write all sorts of content for me? It's helped with the research. So just, I don't get why anyone wouldn't want to play around with it, really.
Yeah, truly. Very exciting times. Well, we talked a lot about, you know, where people in their career, we talked a little bit about the way for teams and organizations to think through how to bring this along. I think the kind of basic, more core advice you are bringing is that digital literacy, which I fully agree with. I love to ask though, you know, in general, was there any advice early in your career that really made a difference for you and, you know, worth paying forward?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And I'll be honest with you, I knew you were going to ask yourself, you know, a lot of thought to it. And there's no one thing that really stands out. I mean, I look at the example my parents set me about taking personal accountability for my own destiny and the work ethic they gave me. And ultimately, that's why I run my own business. So I want to be the sort of owner of my own destiny. But I think if I could highlight one thing that I feel is a real privilege to me, is that this last 10 or 12 years where I've been so immersed in the tech world with, you know, around procurement supply chain, you know, a real privilege in my job is I get to speak to so many amazing business leaders and so many great people when they're looking for new jobs. And I get to take a little bit from each of them. And so what I've learned so much from all those great people, so I think, look at the people around you. Everyone's got something that they're good at. Take a little bit from them and help, you know, help use that to help yourself and your own progression. So always be looking to improve yourself, and always you can take inspiration from so many different sources. So I think never rest and think, this is as good as I'm going to get in my career. Always be striving to improve and be the best version of yourself. That's the way I live my career these days.
Yeah, I agree. And like you said, you can learn something from everyone. Very good, man. Well, that was very fun and I appreciate the conversation. If someone wants to continue nerd out with you on those things, where, you know, where can they find you? Is that the LinkedIn, X,
Yeah, LinkedIn, the best place to get recycled. I mean, if you're interested in talent attraction in any part of the digital procurement ecosystem, you're interested in this research, if you're on digital skills, you need to hire great people into your organization, whether it be software vendor, consultancy, or procurement operations team or procurement excellence team. Find me on LinkedIn. We've got our own website, everydaily.com. You can see that behind me, but LinkedIn's pretty much where I live. It's a big part of what we do. So yeah, love to hear from anybody who's found what I've said interesting. And if you've not found what I've said interesting, then come give me some feedback and welcome that as well, because you know, a chance to learn, of course.
Absolutely, man. It was a pleasure to talk to you today. Thank you so much.
That's my pleasure as well. We managed to get through without any disagreements about the NFC left as well.
Well, it's still early in the season, so we'll see in a few months.
We will, Saki. Thanks for your time.
Awesome, man. Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of Modern Business Operations. You can see the show notes and all of the resources mentioned in today's episode at tonkin.com/mbopod. Thank you for listening, and be sure to subscribe for updates on future episodes. And if you're interested in staying up to date on all things business operations, join the Tonkin community at tonkin.com/community.